We're here on this first Sunday of the new year, and in so many ways it's just another day. We look forward to the new year because it's the start of something, but each day... I'll clip that on a bit better this time, should I? Hopefully that won't come through too loudly on the recording. Otherwise, it could be a shock. As I say, each day is new. It's fresh. It's unknown. But obviously, especially at this time, we look to the new year, the new time, the starting afresh. And so often, with many people, there's a desire to know what is going to happen. What's coming next? You know, what does today hold? What does tomorrow hold? What does the next month, year, etc. hold? And that desire is something that's been with people for an awful long time. I remember my dad, one time, he purchased for each one of us, him, me and my mum, some astrological readings for the year. He'd seen some advert, I don't know, in the newspaper or whatever. And he bought us each a set of these readings. And you had to give your exact date and time of birth, where you were born, and all sorts of information so that these readings could be specific. And, you know, each member of the family was presented with these as a sort of a Christmas gift. I wasn't right impressed, I must admit. And because my dad had given them to me, I sort of read these each day. But to be honest, after about 3 weeks, I gave up because they were a waste of time. He persevered a little bit longer, but I don't think he got past about March before he'd given up as well. My mum never read them at all because she said that's a waste of money and just sort of threw them to one side. But there's the desire in each one of us to know what's going to happen, isn't there? You know, we'd like to have some idea, some clue, some sort of inkling of what's going to be there. We want to know, we want to be prepared. But ultimately, that's speaking about control. We want to be in control. Because if we know what's coming, we can plan for it. You know, if we know what's around the corner, we can get ready for it. People want to be in control. There's a great desire for liberty, for freedom, for choice. Again, it's coming back to the idea of control. We like to be in control of our future. And it's one of the things today, you know, you can have so much choice. I don't know whether you've ever seen it, but there's a film called The Hurt Locker, and it's talking about bomb disposal. And it shows how this, I think he was a sergeant or whatever, comes back on leave. And he's been in this country where there has been no choice. You know, people are existing. And it contrasts that with a scene where he comes back into a supermarket and his wife has said to him, go and get, I don't know, cornflakes or whatever. And he turns the aisle and he looks down this long aisle and the camera pans back. And he just looks and this aisle is filled with boxes of cornflakes or whatever they are. But brand after brand after brand after brand. And he's just, what? What do I do? What do I get? And in the end, he just goes over to the shelf, grabs a packet, any packet, and just goes. He was overwhelmed with choice. He didn't even know where to begin. But we like to be people who can have a choice. Again, it comes back to control. And we use that as we plan for the future. But it's very difficult. You know, especially at this time of year. I've got no control now, that's right. They're going to wonder what's hit them when they're listening to this, aren't they? At this time of year, I'm looking to see what the weather's going to be like, whether I'm going to be on the motorbike or whether I'm going to be on the tram. So to go at the weekend, look what the week ahead holds. Is it going to be frosty? Is there going to be snow, etc.? It's not always reliable. There's been times when I've looked at the weather forecast and it said it's going to be, you know, snow, ice, or whatever. And I think, right, I'm going to go and I'm going to buy a week's tram pass because I'm going to be in the car all week. Go the first day, you got snow, frost, or whatever. Then the rest of the week, I'm stewing because there it is. I could have been on the bike, but I'm wasting my time, sat on the tram, because I've lost control, because I followed the advice, and the advice was wrong. Because we need to build in flexibility to our plans, because we don't know. How far ahead can we look? Tomorrow? Next week? Next month? The further we go, the more unknown gets involved. We might have plans, we might have desires, but how far ahead can we actually make solid, rigid plans? James has got some good advice. In chapter 4, verses 13 to 15, he says this: "Now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to this city or that city, spend a year, carry on business, make some money. Why, you don't even know what will happen tomorrow. What's your life? You're a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if it's the Lord's will, we will do this or that or whatever." But as we make our plans, what are we hoping for? What are our dreams? What are our aspirations? Maybe we've got none. Maybe we've been thwarted so many times we've actually given up on the idea of making any plans at all. You know, the best laid plans of mice and men, etc., come to nothing. Perhaps we think there's nothing left for us to do. We've done everything. But there's always more. What are we aiming for this year? It's not wrong to plan. It's not wrong to have a purpose. But it is wrong to plan and have a purpose without taking God into account. Ultimately, what is our life plan? God is interested in tomorrow. It always strikes me that as a being that inhabits eternity and where there is no time, is very interested in time. God makes his plans and God has his purposes. In Psalm 33:11 it says this: "But the plans of the Lord stand firm forever, the purposes of his heart through all generations." Not just today, not just tomorrow, not just a year in advance, but through all generations his plans stand. He's working out his plans. He's working towards his aim, working towards his goal. In Romans 8:19-22, it says this: "For the creation waits in eager expectation for the children of God to be revealed. For creation was subjected to frustration, not by its own choosing, but by the will of the one who subjected it in hope." God has got a plan for everything, for the whole of creation. It's a big plan, a master plan. So many details, so many things that he's got to bring together at the right time. It goes absolutely beyond our understanding. As the psalmist said, you know, "I can't even grasp your plans. Your ideas, your dreams are so far above and beyond." Why? You're thinking so many plans for each and every day. We can't even count them. It says in Colossians 1:19-20, "For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him," that's Jesus, "and through him to reconcile all things to himself." That is his aim. He's working to reconcile everything to himself. That's his general plan, his master plan. But his plan isn't just general. You know, when you see army maneuvers or things like that, the generals who are in overall control have a plan, a general idea of how things are going to work out. But as they look at it, they can't look, examine and plan every single detail. So what they do is have the overall idea, and then that part is passed down to the next one in the rank, and they have an idea for this particular bit, and then that's passed down the line until you get down to the soldier on the front line who has the ultimate detail of what's happening. But the general doesn't know what's happening to the private. It's not like that with God. God can take into account every single detail. But God also, in that, has a purpose for each one of us. He says to Jeremiah in 1:4-5, "The word of the Lord came to me saying, Before I formed you in the womb, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart and I appointed you. And that's not just Jeremiah. It's each one of us. Speaking to Pharaoh through Moses, this is what God said. I have raised you up for this very purpose. We've looked before how with the exile, he spoke about Cyrus and said, he's my anointed one. He's the appointed one. He's the one I've selected. God had a plan for Cyrus's life. Pat said this morning, the verses from Jeremiah, I have plans. He has plans, perfect plans, worked out in very, very fine detail. Ephesians 2:10 said, we are God's workmanship, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do. He's got a path planned for each one of us. It can be easy to have no plan. It requires no effort to have no plan. We just meander along, take it as it comes. Just fit in, go with the flow. That sort of drifting lifestyle is not what God wants. He has a purpose and a plan. Things that he has worked out in advance that suit us perfectly, fit us ideally, and ultimately will bless us enormously. But also there's the other way. We are constantly bombarded with life plans from the world. You must do this, you must do that, you must be here, you must see this. You know, this idea of a bucket list. You must complete certain things, go to certain places, have seen certain things before you die. We're given ideals, we're given dreams, we're given visions. This is what your life could be like. A range of things, some miles away from godly living and some so close, but not there. Can be very appealing. Can be adventurous, can be fun. Can take a lifetime to fulfill and yet miss the mark that God has set for us. I don't know whether you've heard of the Dakar Rally. It used to be called the Paris-Dakar Rally. And what it was, obviously, it went from Paris to Dakar. Basically, it went from Paris through France, across the Med, and then through the North African countries that were associated with France. It's changed a little bit these days. It's a bit like the Tour de France, where it doesn't actually start in France anymore, or there's a bit that's outside France, you know. Like this year, it started in England. Sorry?
Last year.
Of course, yeah, last year. Old hat already. All right? We're not exactly part of France, even though they might like to have us. We're not there. And the Dakar Rally has expanded. It actually, I think it started on the 4th of this month. So
today.
It might have started today. And it started in Argentina. What? And basically, it's for motor vehicles. Bikes, cars, vans, trucks, whatever. And they race sort of 5,500 miles. 5,500 miles, and they do it in just over a fortnight. They fly. They go through the roughest backcountry, whatever. At points, they're racing across the Sahara Desert. And people, have, not surprisingly, have died on this. You have to carry certain things because you could break down and you could be stuck there for a very long time. I was reading that one guy was so taken up with wanting to compete in this, he sold his house, he sold everything he had to compete in this, because you can imagine to actually compete in this takes an awful lot of money. There are big sort of teams involved in this, KTM, Peugeot, Honda, and they put millions of pounds into the support that's needed. Well, you can imagine that an ordinary person doesn't have that sort of money. So he's sold virtually everything he has got to take part in this rally. He has no chance of winning, but he wants to take part. And his aim, his vision, his goal is to be involved in the Dakar Rally. And he's given everything for that. Paul says, we don't wrestle, we don't strive for a crown that will just disappear, fade, and die. There's something more than that. But this guy is so obsessed, I should say, with wanting to compete, he's given everything to be in it. God, that we might have that same commitment for the things of God. To just finish in that race takes an awful lot of skill, but also an awful lot of luck. And sometimes the strategies that we could employ in our lives rely on luck, on chance. Got a game at Christmas, you might know it, it's an old game called Risk. It's a strategy game. You can plan, figure out, but at the end of the day, it relies on rolling some dice. God doesn't play games like that. Don't want to push the analogy too far, but God would be more of a chess player than a risk player. He doesn't take risks, he doesn't need to. Everything's planned. Colossians 3:2 says, set your mind on things above. Can we surrender our plans, our dreams, our ideals, our visions, and take God's instead? Can we trust him for our tomorrow? Can we trust him with our tomorrow? In the King's Speech in 1939, George VI, I think it was, said these words, taken from a poem. And I said to the man who stood at the gate of the year, give me a light that I may tread safely into the unknown. And he replied, go out into the darkness and put your hand into the hand of God. That shall be to you better than a light and safer than a known way. Philippians 4:19 says, and my God will supply all your needs according to the riches of his glory in Christ Jesus. Deuteronomy 32:3-4 says, I will proclaim the name of the Lord, or praise the name of our God. He is the rock, his works are perfect, and his ways are just. A faithful God who does no wrong, upright and just is he. What he does, what he wants for us, is perfect. But what is his dream for us? What is his plan for us? We don't know. And so often we can be in a place where we've been going along a certain path and suddenly it seems like God's not saying go left or right. But God, what are you saying? In that case, you go straight ahead. If you've ever taken driving lessons or taken a driving test, the examiner tells you where to go. But he doesn't keep saying to you, go straight on, go straight on, go straight on, go straight on. If there's a left turn, he'll say, turn left here. And then you carry straight on until you're told otherwise. And as he says in Isaiah, you'll hear the voice saying where you've got to go. But he doesn't keep saying to us, go straight on. Sometimes it can take wrestling to find out what God's plan for us is. Sometimes it can take extended times. It's almost as if God seems to be very silent, but he's waiting for the time. We've just been obviously celebrating Christmas, and as Dave's favourite word is for that, and I love it myself, at the right time, God speaks. God's plan for our lives can take some wrestling at times because it's not exactly what we want. And there's this sort of aligning of our will with what he's after. But sometimes it can be a case of simply waiting. But that can be so very, very hard. But then again, we've got so many biblical examples of waiting. Think of Abraham. How many years did he wait? He had the promise, and then he just had to go. Waiting can be a very, very bitter lesson to learn. But you know, that isn't wasted, because God wastes nothing. even in the going straight ahead, he's working it out. It can be scary. Sometimes when God tells us his plan, it can be worse than if he hasn't told us his plan, because it's challenging. But he's continually seeking to grow in us and for us to develop. Matthew 6:34 says, "Therefore do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself." We don't worry about tomorrow. We leave that in the hand of God. Psalm 146 verses 5 to 6, "Blessed are those who help is the God of Jacob. He remains faithful forever." Those verses speak of God's ability and God's reliability. He remains faithful forever. He's the one that we can trust. Even at times when we can't hear him giving specific direction at the moment, we carry on what we're doing and waiting for him to speak and say, "Go left, go right. There's something new. There's something different." At Bolton Abbey, it's not as good as it used to be, but there were a series of stepping stones. They were set a reasonable distance apart, but time and people have sort of worn away, so the gaps are getting quite big these days. But there would be times when you would come to that river when the stones were all in place, and there would be mist. The only stone you could see would be the next one. You couldn't see right across, and you were relying on the fact that they were well maintained, the monks had set them in place, and there would be another stone. And so often it's like that with us. We can see the next step and the next step only, and we rely on the one who's fixed those steps in place to take us to where ultimately he plans for us to arrive. We need to put our hand in his hand and trust him as we make those steps. We seek God for our tomorrows, for our next weeks, for next year. We seek God for our dreams and we trust him to fulfill them. May the cry of our heart be, "God, fulfill your dreams for me always." And we'll trust you.